I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
We're heading towards what we are told will be four additional minutes. Oxlade-Chamberlain. Skimming past Rashford.
And a dominant header by Olivier Giroud. The buccaneering bludgeon may well have earned a gunner's point at Old Trafford.
Fabregas, Hazard pulls it down. Giroud sidesteps two and pokes it in. What a start to the second half for Chelsea. And that was a really well taken goal.
C'est lui qui sort en tout cas.
Marcos Alonso, Giroud qui va pour le retourner. Oh là là, quel but! En jeu.
En jeu, Messi.
Oh là 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 là.
Welcome to the Book Club on Football Ramble Presents. I'm Kate Mason.
And I'm Jim Campbell.
And today we have a world champion with us, a current world champion no less, scorer of spectacular goals in England and all over the world, a world-class player and a man who has lifted many of football's biggest prizes, yet one who's often found himself fighting for recognition and game time in the Premier League.
We've got five breaking here. Sanchez. Behind Giroud.
His scorpion kick for Arsenal won the Puskás Award for the most beautiful goal of the season in 2017. But by January the following year, he'd moved across town to Chelsea in search of game time. Today, he's a forward for AC Milan, a Champions League player again with the Serie A title in his sights. But he has also one eye on his future. And with that in mind, he's decided to tell the story of his life so far. We're delighted to say today, for Book Club, we have Olivier Giroud with us to discuss his autobiography, Always Believe. Olivier, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to Jim and me for Book Club. It is a pleasure to have you.
Hi, everybody. Thank you. Thank you so much. Nice description.
I'm glad it went down okay. And we're speaking to you the morning after Arsenal Crystal Palace, Olivier, which must be a fixture that brings back good memories for you. Did you ever feel pressure to score beautiful goals?
Well, yeah, I remember this game in 2017, 1st of January, first day of the year. And yeah, I couldn't do better when I scored this scorpion kick. It was an unbelievable moment for me, and I will never forget it, obviously. And yeah, I watched a bit of the game yesterday last night. And it reminds me of a lovely moments I spent at the Emirates Stadium.
Your face after you've scored that goal is an absolutely classic thing. It's like, do you remember how it felt? It looked like you must have been having some sort of out-of-body experience. It's a ridiculous goal. It's an absolutely ridiculous goal. We used to joke on our podcast about what happens if you score with a scorpion kick. Do you complete football, basically? But your face looked like that you felt like you completed football.
Well, yeah, I was, to be honest with you, a tiny bit surprised also because I just tried to hit the ball and to do as best as I could, you know, within that situation. Yeah, I will never forget it. And I think I will not be able to do it again. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that moment. And it was, wow, yeah, you could have seen it on my face.
I guess that's what part of the process of writing this book has been for you, taking the chance to sit and look at some of those goals that Jim mentions and just look at what you've achieved throughout your career. How did it work for you as a process? How did you find the experience of writing this book?
Well, I've been asked by a person, Dominique Rouch, the writer I wrote the book with, if I would have been happy to do it. And to be honest, I was not sure it was the right moment because I was still playing. And yeah, most of the time, you know, players write a book when they just retire. So I was like asking my family, my friends, my entourage about that. And I felt it was the right moment and a good opportunity to do it, to talk about my childhood experience and where I come from, the story of my life. And I really enjoyed it, to be honest. It was it took time, investment, but regarding time, because we've got busy schedule. But I really enjoyed it, and at the end I'm really happy with the final results.
Yeah, we're speaking to you, of course, just before a Champions League game against Porto tonight. So thank you very much for fitting all this in. In terms of that process, as you say, I guess probably one of the reasons people tend to do it after they've retired is because there must be fear about like making headlines when you're talking about some of these historical situations that people will be able to think of them easily. Was that something that was stressful to you? How did you manage that?
Yeah, as I said, when you're still a football player, when you are still involved, for example, with the national team, with your clubs, is quite difficult to... I mean, you have to measure every single... Measure is the right word? I don't know. To every single word which came out from your mouth, because you know that you will be judged on every single thing you said. So, yeah, for example, it's easier when you retire to write a book, then you don't have... you can speak very frankly, you know, about every single situation in your career. I try to do it in my book. I try to speak with no filter. And very frankly, and but it's true that you always think about what people will think, you know, and you try to find a good balance, if I can say, you know, as still a football player in activity, you know.
Is it nice to have the opportunity to tell your own side of some of these stories, where obviously there was a situation in the summer where the press made something out of nothing with yourself and Kylian Mbappe, and it must feel like a real release to actually have your thoughts on that on the record and to just get that out there and put it to bed. Is there a sense of closure with it?
Yeah, and it was easier for me to talk about that also because Kylian spoke about it in press and. Basically, I just speak very frankly, and I just wanted to clarify things, and by saying it was such a small thing, you know, and the press wanted to make it bigger, and to sometimes look for trouble. But I think we just sorted out him and myself, and a couple of days after that small issue we had, it was totally forgot, you know. So and we moved on and we just went for the next job mentality. That's most important.
I guess it's because partly people were looking, wanting to find answers, weren't they? They were looking for explanation after the Euros. And so people have a lot of pages to fill, right, Olivia? You must have a lot of experience
of
that.
Yes, definitely. No, I know. I understand they always try to find answers and to explain, maybe to find why we didn't go through against Switzerland. But I think that was not because of our small story with Kylian. It was before the Euros Cup. We started strong against Germany. We were confident. We had on the paper, to be honest with you, the best team of the tournament. That's why football also is amazing. You know, nothing is written in advance. Nothing gets given. And when you face a strong team also like Switzerland and you are leading 3-1, everything can happen in football. And I believe maybe if we play this game 9 more times, you know, we will win it. But that's the beauty of football also. You never know what can happen. And well, maybe we should have put the game to bed and just stay at the back, defend. But sometimes, you know, I think the supporters, the fans, the people who watch it on TV really enjoyed it. It was a crazy game, but obviously not the best feeling, not the best memory for us.
Of course. So every footballer's book seems to contain one major revelation that the press will go absolutely wild for. And yours is that you're scared of Alf. Which was something I wasn't expecting to read. Does he still frighten you?
Well, I don't like him, and still now when I see him, I don't understand why. But maybe his appearance, maybe the way he's talking, maybe because he likes to eat cat, or if I remember.
Yeah, he does. He is a weird character. It's only when you sort of
really squished up nose, hasn't he?
What do you think, you guys? Honestly, he frightened me. And plus,
if you're not aware of Alf, those listening at home, it stands for alien life form. It was an American sort of like puppet about this kind of smart aleck alien that looked a bit like a pig and a monkey at the same time. And as you say, he ate cats, which is actually really dark.
Yeah.
Like really, he is a bit frightening. Are you concerned that rival supporters are going to sort of turn up dressed as him now to put you off?
I think
it's a big revelation.
I would try to focus on the pitch and the game, but yeah, obviously I would be very, very worried if I see it in the stadium. It would be so funny, but I think it's not a good idea to give to the fans.
No, yes, sorry about that.
Your family, weren't they? They're sort of taking the mickey out of you and Roman, your brother, who was himself a great footballer, right? Mm-hmm. You talk a bit about him in the book, but he didn't manage to have a career in the game. And you talk about actually being, when you first get your chance, you talk about being nervous about going down this route because you've seen what happened with your brother. Is that something that's, how has that developed over the course of your life?
It was more like my family, my parents, that they were a bit upset, you know, regarding seeing another of their children going far from them. You know, at 14 years old, he left the family house. He was by himself, and it was tough, but I think he was mature enough to deal with it. It was a strong character, you know, and I think he did very well. He played a national team with Titi Henry, and David Trezeguet. At this time, he was one of the best defenders. But yeah, as you said, he didn't have the possibility to go through a professional career. And he was my hero. He was an example for me. And obviously, at the time, Auxerre, when I was 15 years old, they wanted to sign me. My parents said, no, it was a bad experience. You can move everywhere you want, but apart there. So I just accepted, and I felt I was not mature enough as it was at this age. And I believe it was the right choice. It was the first right choice we've made in my young career. You know, at this time, I needed time. And one more time, I was not ready to go and to live by myself. So I feel very lucky, very blessed one more time, thanks to my faith, and because I believe the Lord's got a plan for every single person on earth. And basically, when I used to say in Proverbs 16:9, the human being, like, just they make their path, and the Lord just set the pace. It means you are responsible of your choices or what you want to achieve in life, but the Lord always look after you and help you to do the right choices. And my parents just helped me to raise me, to educate me with these values, and always to keep working with humility and respect, and always go for the next job mentality, like next step, always improve. And yeah, I feel I got so much support from my family, from Romain, Bertrand also, the oldest one, and my sister also, B.
It's been kind of amazing to think of you as being second best a couple of times. You talk about when Arsene Wenger, it was clear that you were not so much in his plans. And then this, when you had to push for a move from Chelsea as well. What do you make of that? I mean, you're a guy who's had so much success, who scored, as we've already talked about, some incredible, important goals. You've played at the highest level for the national team, the best national team around. How do you explain that? Why do you think that was the case a number of times in your career?
I think it was the story of my life. To always fight for my place, because maybe from my young age, you always had to push myself and to for getting the best of my game. Because when I'm too much relaxed and I stay in my comfort zone, if I can say, I'm not at my best. So I believe, competition is very important in life, and it helped me to step up.
It does seem to be that your response to being dropped has always been to knuckle down and then make yourself undroppable with these amazing runs of scoring goals. When you've come back in from the cold, or been coming off the bench and then effectively forcing yourself back into the lineups, and that's true with the national team as well. And I've never had the opportunity to ask anyone this, Olivier, but what does it feel like when you actually lift the World Cup? When that thing we've all dreamed about, that moment actually comes true, what is that like?
Well, to complete the previous question, I would say some of my friends, a lot of friends and families used to say that I'm the best when I am back of the wall. I would have preferred sometimes things went smoother. And I always had to overcome like skepticism and criticism, and it helped me to always believe in myself and to show people wrong. And this World Cup was basically the best thing could happen in my career. Lifting the trophy was kind of a relief, amazing achievement in my life, in my career. I was so proud, it's make me goosebumps when I'm talking about this. It it's a kind of childhood dream. Like you wouldn't believe that when you're a young player. I remember when I was young, when I was 8 or 10 years old, my friend just reminded me the day before the final. He said, listen, Oli, you remember when we were a kid, you said one day you would become World Cup winner. That's the time you need to grab it, you need to go for it. And, well, that's it. You know, it's amazing. I'm part of the 500, I think, roughly players who won the World Cup, and for a football player, nothing is better.
And you touch on this in the book, though, Olivier. It must be hard to really feel it, you know, because this is something that is the dream of anybody in the world, pretty much. How can you compute that? You can't really, can you?
Everything went so quick that I believe even today that I didn't enjoy it enough, you know, because we had this parade the day after the final on Champs-Élysées. Also, this parade went too quick. People were a bit upset because the coach, the Imperial coach, you know, we've been in with the lifting the World Cup, showing people how much we were proud of it, and after in with the president and with our family, it was busy time, and I just realized it the week after when I have done the baptism of my little one, around my third kid, that could enjoy it really properly with my family. But yeah, with the boys, everything went so quick after the final. We went back to the training camp. We had a party. But yeah, you just want to celebrate it for months, a year, you know, all the year. And that's football, you know. I mean, maybe 6 weeks later, we had to play another game for qualifiers for the Euros Cup, you know. So, yeah, I used to say football is a everlasting new beginning, and every single week you have to like be ready for the next challenge, the next game, and that's why we wanted to do well in the Euros, and because it was so frustrating in 2016 to lose to Portugal at home. And that's one of my regrets in my career, if I can say, not to have finished the job, if I can say, by winning the Euros Cup, and then maybe also to win the Premier League with Arsenal or Chelsea. You know, that's my two smaller regrets so far. But I still have a lot of hopes regarding winning another league with my new club. I'm 100% focused on it.
And good luck in doing that. We'll wish you the best in that opportunity. If we could stay on the World Cup for a little while and on international football. Now, obviously, winning the World Cup is an incredible thing for any player, and obviously a hugely emotional thing. But and you've touched on how quickly you then have to get back into the qualification processes for the Euros and the World Cup, and just how kind of relentless international football is. We're hearing a lot of plans about having a World Cup every 2 years now. From a player's point of view, someone who's gone deep in those tournaments, what do you feel about that? Do you personally? I think I feel it would be a little bit too much. But from a player's perspective, how do you feel about that?
Just believe it's better to be a World Cup winner for 4 years rather than 2 years. So I would say no. But seriously, we play so many games, as you know. We've got busy calendars, and we at the end of the season, we basically are tired about just playing so many games. So I believe we have to look to take care about players' health, fitness, and if we play another big competition, which include a lot of pressure, a lot of demands, and big focus, and like, you know what I mean, is massive. So I don't know if they can fit it up in a calendar, in a schedule, but I don't know how it's possible, but no, I prefer to stay a World Cup winner for 4 years, basically. I believe it's the same for the other players. But that gives a chance to the others to win it 2 years after. So I would stay for every 4 years.
Does it surprise you that your old hero, Arsene Wenger, is the one who seems to be like pushing all this, knowing everything you know about him, knowing how he knows football?
Oh, I wouldn't say I'm against his ideas, because I have so much respect for him, and I think he's doing a great job for international football. But it would be interesting to talk about this with him, and I would need him to explain me why he wants to do this. But yeah, he is basically a legend for all the Arsenal fans, and also I'm very grateful for him to give me the opportunity to realize my childhood dream. So I think he's a man we need to listen and to explain why it will be better for football. And then maybe I will change my mind. Who knows?
I don't know if this is just my cloth English ear, Olivier. I feel as though you sound not dissimilar in the way that you speak to Arsene Wenger. Is this deliberate in terms of your delivery? Are you trying to channel the great man?
Yeah, as I said, he's a special person for me, and he's such a wise person, and when every single word came out from his mouth as very, very powerful, and he's got so much experience in football that I think he's at the right place today to help football to grow up again, and I miss talking with him, and I hope I will get the opportunity to see him soon.
Time to get to a break now. On the other side, we'll be talking more about nights out with the France national team and your relationship, Olivier, with Arsene Wenger.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This is Detective Abberline.
Hearing you, Abberline. Go ahead.
We've got the body of a male on Durwood Street, Whitechapel, just behind the tube. A Mark Allen Nichols. His throat has been cut, a stab wound below his shoulder blade, and,
Continue, please, Detective.
Yeah, she's cut off his knob and put his bollocks in the recycling bins.
Stack presents a thrilling new audio fiction.
She cut his throat, unbollocked the guy, and decocked him for good measure.
The body of a man brutally murdered in Whitechapel was discovered this morning.
That was Jackie's way. Evil, bloodthirsty, sexually explicit, and just... yeah, just bloody horrible, really. Step into the scene. Me, yours truly, moi, that's, me, lead detective, Freddie Abberline of Scotland Yard.
There is a man next to us who has been brutally murdered and dismembered.
Well, go and find his member then. Jesus Christ. Oh, but we've kept his AirPods in, I see. What's he listening to? Death metal? Zombie Nation?
Follow me as I hunt the most vicious serial killer known to man. Good Lord, she stuffed his eye sockets with his own bollocks.
Jackie the Ripper. The infamous Whitechapel murders. Retold. By the makers of The Offensive. Available now on all podcast platforms.
Sorry, Sally, I got your shoes. Ah, oh, it's my Wagamama from earlier. Let's have a closer look.
Looks like noodles.
No, him.
Jackie the Ripper. Hold on to your bollocks.
So, Olivia, I am an Arsenal fan, as we've established already. And I obviously love going over to the stadium, of course, but... sometimes it can be quite stressful, just as a stadium. I know a lot of stadiums can be like that. But I often wonder, did you find as a player that sometimes that anxiety from the supporters would come onto the pitch? Because this is something we all sort of worry about as Arsenal fans, that we get stressed out and then it translates onto the field. Is it something that you're kind of aware of as you're playing, or can you shut all of that out?
Well, regarding Arsenal, I can understand the frustration to not being in the top of the league, especially because Arsenal has been incredible under Arsene Wenger over the 20 past years, you know. But I believe Mikel Arteta and his staff needs time to come back to the top. Obviously, as I already mentioned, money is a huge part of the process, you know, to be successful. When you see Chelsea, City or United signing top players, spending a lot of money, it's not everything, but it's a big part of success, you know. So I hope that Arsenal will have the opportunity to sign important players that can make the game change.
And hopefully they will, although I support Spurs. Let's talk a little bit about your family, because there's a big, strong feature across the whole of your book, Olivier. And you say, is it right you were present for the birth of all four of your kids in the end? But this is just by magic, you know? Most footballers, quite often, they'll be away when their partners are giving birth. And you speak about how much of a magical moment it was for you.
Well, one thing is, when you're a football player and you're so busy, you're always traveling, and people have to think about the fact that we are... I didn't have the opportunity to be there when my grandparents passed away, for example, for birthdays or sometimes wedding, and I felt I was lucky to be there for my kid's birth, you know. And that's one of the sacrifices we have to make by living abroad or in another country, sorry. And we don't get the opportunity to be closer to our family. And that's what I miss the most, you know, my hometown, my hometown, my friends, my family, The difficult side of being a football player. Obviously, I have lots of advantage, but one thing is sure is I was lucky. I feel lucky to get the opportunity to be there for their birth, and that's the most amazing things happen in my life. Obviously, with the World Cup
for all four of your children as well. That's some pretty amazing timing, really. Some pretty high odds that you managed to do that. That's great.
Yeah. But as I said, sometimes you cannot go back to France, for example, for me to be there for big events or for funerals, as I said. But come on, for your kid's birth, the manager can understand.
Yeah. But can he? Because you said about, I think it was Evan was born and he's born at 10 p.m. and you spoke to the manager and he says, oh yeah, great. Or, you know, something a bit more supportive than that. And then like, see you in training at eight o'clock next morning. After. Like, what is it? Do you think this is okay? Like, it seems to me, you know, obviously if you're a female, you wouldn't have that chance, right? You have to take a bit of a break. And it's so important to be around. Like, what do you make of that as a culture?
Yeah, and that's welcome in football. I believe maybe it's the same in other sports, but it's always like that. You have to enjoy the moment, but after the manager, the mister, like, bring you back to reality, and you have to go to training the day after. But as long as my wife was okay and my kid was in a good health, I was okay, you know, with that. And the main thing is to be here on the delivery day, you know.
So we're seeing an age now, Olivier, where strikers in particular seem to be lasting for a lot longer. I mean, you're 35 and you're playing for AC Milan. Obviously, you've got Zlatan Ibrahimovic in the same squad. He's in his 40s now, which is absolutely incredible. Do you feel like this is a does this give you confidence that you can just carry on and on and on? Because it seems to be some of the best players in the world are players like Robert Lewandowski, who are well into their 30s. It's a very new thing in football. Do you think that's because nutrition's improved and we understand sports science a bit more?
Lewandowski, I think he's 32, so he's still young. But Zlatan is a good example for the youngsters professionalism wise. He's doing everything which is important to stay fit. But if your body allowed you to play that much, until you're 40 years old, you have to keep in your mind that the determination and the motivation plays even a bigger part. I mean, if your body lets you down, okay, you have to stop. But if your body is ready, as I said, for myself, I feel good. I feel in a good shape. And what makes a difference at this level is how much you want to carry on and how much motivation you put in the game and in the fact that you are still hungry for titles and to play more and more. And it's just a matter of attitude and mentality and mental strength. I believe Zlatan is the best for that also. And you know how much he believes in himself and that he wants to achieve great things. And is a good example that we can play if you really want it. You can play until 40, maybe. For me, I don't know, but I still believe I have 2-3 years in front of me. Yeah.
You've had that experience of seeing France win a title without you, with the Nations mm-hmm. League just recently. How did you manage that?
Well,
emotionally, I mean.
Yeah, I would be a liar if I said I don't miss I don't miss it. I don't miss the boys. I don't miss the dressing room, you know, and the feeling to win it, to win something altogether, because as a French national team, I mean, when you play for your country, it's the best feeling ever. Make you so proud, and your family also. So yeah, it was a bit weird for me to watch them on TV, but I was cheering up for them, and I was so happy when they lifted the trophy, even if it was a bit frustrating for me. I was at the end, I was happy for them, but it's a good answer after the difficult Euros Cup we had, and I'm proud to be French for that.
Do you miss also, in the book, you speak a little bit about some nights where you let off steam, even during the World Cup, which was really fun for like fans to hear about, right? And there was something with Adorami involving the fire extinguisher, as you say, that has been much spoken about. Do you miss that kind of those nights, the fight? Jim and I laughed because obviously, you know, we're English, and the idea of you all having fine wines laid out for you is like a quite hilarious cliche in the context of a French football team, right? Do you miss that kind of bonding?
Yeah, before being football players, we are first human beings, so we need to enjoy the good stuff, the good things of the life. And I believe to be successful is very important to have, especially when you live together for almost 2 months, 54, 55 days, I think, in total, in a big competition. You have to create that team cohesion, you know, that alchemy between the players, and you have to share this kind of moment, you know, to stick together and to create links between each other. I have amazing memories, and I think we were strong on the field, on the pitch, but it was also because of our good team cohesion, team spirit. You know, we were all friends. We were enjoying our time together, and even the one who didn't play much, they were 100% behind the team, and that's incredible to see these players. You know, who could have been a bit frustrated, but they were like watching, aiming on the same targets as the others.
Andrea Pirlo famously has a vineyard now. Well, when he was retired, is that a route for Olivier Giroud? Pirlo, he has a vineyard.
Yeah. No. Oof. Stop.
What do you reckon?
No, I love it. I love it. I'm a big fan of French wine and obviously French gastronomy, as you know. And I consider myself as an Epicurean, so I really enjoyed. You know, I believe you can be a sportsman and also enjoy the nice food, nice wine. Sometimes, not too much, but in France we used to say a small glass, wine glass every day is healthy. Not every day, but now it's very interesting that he's got a vineyard, and I believe he knows the French wine quality.
Certainly he does. And so if that's not your future, or maybe it is,
no.
It sounds like it could be. What do you reckon? What are you looking at? You say you're not so fussed about the idea of management.
It's a bit too early, but one thing is sure. I think I would stay. Will stay in football because that's what I know the most. Since my young age, I've been involved in football for so many years, and I think I've got some credit in it, and I think I have to use it, you know, and also because I think I can help with my experience, and also the sport director kind of being involved in academy development and also scouting and you know, doing different things, you know, in touch with the first team, but not only the transfer politic of the club. Or so I don't know what I'm going to do. But one thing is sure, I will stay in football. Management is not for me, I think, because I need my wife would kill me. Because you have less, even less time that for your family, and you are so busy and stressed also to compare when you were a player. So yeah, it's I've got so much respect for the managers that also because I read the book Arsene Wenger book, and he said I dedicated my whole life to football, and maybe my only regret was to left a little bit on the side of the family life, and that's why you can, I think, maybe find a good balance. But if you want to be involved 100%, is you have to make sacrifices. And I think my family has made a lot so far. So.
Okay, so sporting director for a club, a football club in London, sounds like Olivier Giroud.
I don't know. Yeah. You tell him that. I don't know. It would be amazing. But We'll see.
We would absolutely take you as director of football and scorpion kicks at Arsenal, Olivia. I mean, it's not my position to give, I'm sure we could make it happen.
There's a job would be also amazing. It's like coaching strikers, but I don't know if would be very épanoui. I don't know the English. Like I would be very very. Happy to do only this, but it could be one of the things I can help to. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to seeing where it goes, Olivier. Thank you so much for joining us today for Book Club.
Me a few years enjoying football still, and after we'll see.
Of course, we're not writing you off. I'm sorry. We're just curious to know. Of course. Hope the game goes well later today. Thank you so much for joining us for Book Club. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We really enjoyed our conversation with Olivier Giroud for this episode of Book Club. If you've got suggestions of other books you'd like us to read, feel free to get in touch on Twitter. I'm on at KVL Mason.
And I'm at Jim Campbell TFR.
Or you can tweet us at Football Ramble, of course. Olivier's book, Always Believe, is out now with Pitch Publishing. You can get it wherever you get your books.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes. I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly. Seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more. Then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.